Hello, I'm your host, Erin Gruel, and welcome to the Freedom Writers Podcast. Today's show features my conversation with Scarlett Lewis, an ardent activist whose son, Jesse, was tragically killed during the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting in 2012. Scarlett talks about turning her pain into purpose and how Jesse's message of nurturing, healing love can change the world. Scarlett's experiences on that dreadful day are heart-wrenching, but her mission to teach others the importance of choosing love is truly inspiring. I hope this episode will leave you feeling enlightened and empowered to make a difference. December 14th, 2012 was a day unlike any other for the community of Newtown, Connecticut. Before the violence at Sandy Hook Elementary School, violent crime had been virtually non-existent for this small rural suburb with only one homicide in the previous 10 years. However, after the events of that day, their town would be forever changed. Over the course of just 5 minutes, six teachers and 20 students lost their lives to senseless violence. The shooter, Adam Lanza, then took his own life, ending the then second largest mass shooting in U.S. history. Today's guest, Scarlett Lewis, lost her six-year-old son, Jesse, a first grade student at Sandy Hook. Jesse died bravely, trying to lead other students to safety during the chaos. In the months following Jesse's death, Scarlett found solace in notes left by Jesse before his death. Inspired by one of Jesse's notes, which read, "Nurturing, healing love," Scarlett started the Jesse Lewis Choose Love movement in his honor. Since its founding, the movement has created free curriculum for schools, parents, and teachers to nurture understanding and to stop another horrific tragedy like Sandy Hook. Without further ado, here is my conversation with Scarlett Lewis. Can you start there about that philosophy that allowed you to take a moment and turn it into a movement?
I have a few philosophies that I have stumbled upon in life as it's happening. I think I was talking about how life is just always happening around us. And it is kind of our job to try to thoughtfully respond with love in everything that's happening. There is no perfection, and that's okay. And that's what I've tried to do.
You know, I think that what's amazing about some of our guests in the past, they have lots of hyphens, and as do you. You have lots of hyphens. The hyphens I think of when I think of you, first and foremost, are mother, and not just biological mother. I think that you're a healing mother to so many. And I also like the hyphen humanitarian, and I like the hyphen of a creator of a movement. You know, and to be a creator of a movement takes a lot of creativity and guts. So when you think of hyphens that we could put beside your name, what would be some of the hyphens that you would think of?
Oh my gracious. Well, mother's my favorite, but I would say creator. I love creating things, and art is one of my favorite things to do. And I have been an oil painter for 30 years. And I love, love, love my friends that paint and my art instructor. I mean, personally, I love horseback riding, and I love animals, and I love children, and I love peace. And I am constantly searching for peace. I feel like I've been doing that my whole life, mostly for myself, and now to create peace for others.
As you know, we have listeners around the globe. And for some of our listeners, they didn't have the constant barrage of the media fixation about your story. And for those of us that live in America, you know, sadly, we know your story, but I want to be sensitive to the 80 countries that not only we serve, but your movement also serves. And what I'd love for us to do is to go backwards, to gently bring folks forward. And I want to go back to exactly what you said. You are a creator of peace, and your story, sadly, is in the epicenter of madness and destruction, and and the fact that you don't let that destruction hold you down. So gently, for listeners who are discovering you and your movement and your message, how would you describe those days that peace was not among us and peace stopped in your community? How would you describe that for someone who is discovering the ever so beautiful and wonderful Scarlett Lewis for the first time?
First, I would start off with Jesse's message, which has become my life's mission to spread. And that is a message that my six-year-old son left on our kitchen chalkboard shortly before he was murdered at Sandy Hook Elementary School. Most people are familiar with that tragedy, but he wrote three words: nurturing, healing, love. And they're actually right around the corner from where I'm sitting right now. He did that shortly before he died. And I found these three words the first time that I came back to the house. And I realized that if the shooter, a former student, by the way, of Sandy Hook Elementary School, whose mother had taught at the school, if he had been able to give and receive nurturing, healing love, the tragedy would never have happened. It was so simple. Simple isn't always easy, but you know, I realized, and it made me realize, that hurt people hurt people. And so, you know, as Oprah Winfrey and Dr. Bruce Perry's new book asks us to say, not asking what's wrong with you, but what happened to you? And it made me wonder what happened to the young man who felt like that was his only way out, was to kill himself, but take out his pain and anger on as many people as he could before he left this earth. And that's really where my story starts.
As a public school teacher, what's so difficult is, you know, we open the door and in come these beautiful children, all shapes and sizes, colors and hues, and we invite parents in, we invite the community in. And I think when those that send their kids off to school or those that invite kids in, that was never on our radar prior to a Columbine, prior to a Sandy Hook. So as a parent with a beautiful six-year-old son who would leave you messages that will continue to speak to you, what was that like when you first heard that something had happened in your community? And when you first heard it was your son's school. And I'm sure as the news unfolded, the layers continued. First, it's the community, school, and then your own child. What was that like as the bits and pieces of that news started making its way to you?
Well, I was at work. I'm a single mom, single working mom. And so I had just arrived after my commute at work, and someone was watching the news at home. One of my coworkers had taken the day off, and she instant messaged me and said, you know, I think there's been a shooting in Sandy Hook. Well, that, you know, it just never, that never happens to you. I mean, it was just, that's not something that was ever going to impact my family. Like you said, we just don't normally think about that. Even after Columbine, even after Aurora, and there's so many other shootings that happened before Sandy Hook, and of course after, but it never happens to you. and so I really wasn't worried. It was a shooting somewhere in Sandy Hook. And then people started coming up to my desk and saying, hey, I think there was a shooting in a school in Sandy Hook. Still, you know, that's it's terrible, but it doesn't directly usually impact you. And then someone came up and said, I think that it doesn't your son go to Sandy Hook Elementary School? I think that there was a shooting there. So then we heard that it was a teacher. There was a teacher that had gotten shot in the foot. I immediately thought some sort of domestic dispute. I got in my car to drive the 45 minutes to the school because we had gotten a message that the kids were being evacuated and parents were supposed to pick them up at a firehouse that was at the end of a cul-de-sac where the school was. So I started my commute and I had friends that were calling me, updating me with information. Still, I was just going to go to the school and pick up my son. I was upset, but never in a million years did I think that that would be my son that was, you know, that was dead. And I did start getting worried when I got in within the vicinity and I had to park about a quarter of a mile away because there were cars lining the street, military helicopters flying overhead, army men already on the scene, first responders, sirens, people running here and there. And as I ran up to the firehouse, there were people milling. By then, already a lot of relieved parents that had been joined up with their kids and leaving. And so it was a chaotic scene, as you can imagine. And I was just going to get Jesse and bring him home. But of course, I didn't find him. And, you know, people kept telling me, well, if you don't have your loved one, go into the back room and sign, you know, put his name on a list of missing people. And I was thinking, I'm not putting his name on a list of missing people. I'm just going to find him and take him home. And of course, you know, somebody said, well, I think he went over to the little yellow house on the left side of the firehouse. And I thought, oh, okay. So went up, knocked on the door. This older man who I now know, answered the door and said, well, I think Jesse was here, but I think he went to the daycare on the opposite side, which is actually where he attended daycare. And actually, of course, those were the kids that Jesse saved from his first grade classroom that had run there first and then somewhere else. Of course, we didn't end up finding him. Eventually, I did go into that room and I did put his name down underneath a long list of missing people. But, you know, even when I did that, it just never in a million years did it cross my mind that all those people were dead. And the first responders would tell us, oh, you know, we're resweeping the school. We think that, you know, kids ran out and they may be hiding in the woods. And I thought, well, of course, because Jesse's very courageous and scrappy. I bet he took a small contingent of kids out and they're still hiding in the woods. It's going to take him a while to find them. So that's just kind of how the day unfolded, hours and hours waiting for any word, not being able to go to the school. As you can imagine, I thought, well, this is ridiculous after waiting for a while. I'm going to go to the school. And there were guards in front of the school, state troopers, I think. And I said, well, I am going to the school. I'm going to find out where my son is. And he said, no, you can't. I'm not allowed. You can't. And, you know, we just had an exchange with the eyes and I just wasn't ready to take in that reality. I don't think, like, looking back, I see there were lots of indications of what had happened. And I just don't think I was ready to accept that reality. And it was hours and hours that we were held, you know, left there waiting. But looking back, I see that with gratitude because I was just taking in what was going on and unable to accept. It took me that long to really kind of accept. And when I was finally told that Jesse had been murdered, I had already come to that conclusion on my own.
Scarlett, your dear friend, Daryl Scott, who tragically lost his daughter, Rachel, at Columbine, mm-hmm. says that you and he are part of this strange sorority and fraternity that oftentimes when he starts getting phone calls from numbers he doesn't have identified in his phone that he has this sinking feeling that there's been another mass shooting. In your case, it was Sandy Hook or Parkland. What has that been like to be part of this familial sorority and fraternity that people now come to you after there is a shooting that came after Sandy Hook, and they are seeking answers and they're seeking sense out of the madness, and there may not be sense out of the madness?
It's very difficult to speak to parents who have lost their precious children looking for answers. I believe that there are answers. I believe that every school shooting is 100% preventable, but I'm not going to tell a newly bereaved parent that their child's murder could have been prevented. But that is what I have dedicated my life to, reducing and preventing the suffering that leads to mass tragedy and so many of the other issues that we're seeing today that are escalating despite our what is seemingly, of course, our best efforts to date. And I'm talking about also suicide and substance abuse and anxiety and depression and other mental illnesses, as well as violence. I believe that a lot of that can be reduced and prevented.
I love that fighting spirit you have. And I know that you're very spiritual. You've had these amazing moments of divinity that you believe, I believe, is Jesse speaking to you in real time. And for anyone that's had great loss, when our loved ones visit us and there's a flash of a light bulb or a feeling in a room. So I've lost my father, and I desperately believe that he's always with me as well. So I believe, as you do, that Jesse does come back and leave you signs and roadmaps. So can you tell our listeners what's that like when you discover these beautiful signs, like the chalkboard, the lights flickering, and other moments that give you cause of gratitude?
It's so it leads me from believing to knowing. And you know, we started out talking about peace, but it provides a peace that surpasses all understanding. I'll tell you a little story. The last time that I saw Jesse, normal morning, you know, as a single mom with two boys, getting one boy off who took a different bus, and then, getting Jesse ready to go while I'm preparing to get out the door and get to work on time. And Jesse's dad was picking him up. And so I walked him out. It's December 14th in Sandy Hook, Connecticut. So it's cold. And so we were actually going to meet him that day to build gingerbread houses in his classroom that afternoon. So I was going to work, and I had already made arrangements to leave work early to go back to the school to build gingerbread houses with Jesse. And so I turned around to give him a hug. And I noticed that he had written in the frost on the side of my car with his little fingernail, "I love you." And he'd drawn hearts in all of my windows. And so as I was giving him a hug, I'm looking over his shoulder and I'm seeing all this. And I was like, "Oh, Jesse, I love that. You wrote a little note for me. Stay right here. And I'm going to run in and get my phone so I can take a picture of it, so I can, you know, remember it always." So I run inside, get my phone, come back out. And I remember, you know, he has this big winter coat on, and I took him by the shoulders and I'm positioning him by the car so I can get him and the message and the hearts in the background. So I remember taking a picture. It was overexposed, deleting it, taking another picture, and then taking a close-up picture of the "I love you" on the car, because of course that would be gone as the day progressed. This is frost on the side of the car. It's momentary. Then I gave him another hug and I helped him get into his dad's truck, and off they went. And then off I went to my job. And, And then that's when that whole day progressed. But, you know, that's, I feel like that is an awareness that he had, a spiritual awareness that he had, just like writing, nurturing, healing, love on our kitchen chalkboard. It was phonetically spelled because he was 6 years old in first grade and just learning how to write. But those three words are in the definition of compassion across all cultures. They're not even in a six-year-old's vernacular. So I believe that was also a spiritual awareness. And when I think about how Jesse, even the courage that he showed in his classroom when the shooter who had just murdered his principal and counselor right outside his open classroom door and then came into his classroom and his gun jammed, and Jesse standing up to the shooter and yelling for his classmates to run. They said it's because he told them to run, that they ran. And then the shooter was, reloaded and murdered the rest of the kids in the room. But, you know, just all of this, so many signs I continue to receive. And it makes me not believe anymore, because I say, yeah, I believed before, but I know now that not just he, but I also had a precognitive awareness that something was going to happen. And so I believe that that helps strengthen me to be part of the solution, to understand, to look at it at a little bit different way. I mean, after the tragedy, I watched how people reacted and I wanted to do something different. I did not want to focus on the negativity, the anger. I didn't want to live my life that way. I said previously, you know, I was always searching for peace. And so I wanted to focus on the positive. How do you do that after having your son brutally murdered? Well, Jesse gave me a way. He wrote it on our kitchen chalkboard, nurturing, healing, love. And I had to think about it. How does that fit in what just happened in one of the worst mass murders in US history? How can we use that message to reduce and prevent the suffering that led to that shooting? I mean, Adam Lanza, and sometimes I use his name, I don't use his name in the media, but I do in situations like this, because I think it's really, really important that we remember that these individuals are human and they're humans in pain. They are suffering to the point where they believe that this is the only way out. And so I think that it's really important that we remember that, and that we also, in understanding that, know that this could have been prevented. I stood up. I say that the Choose Love movement started at Jesse's funeral, and it actually did start at Jesse's funeral when I addressed the congregation, who had all been asking me, well, what can we do? What can we do? And I said, there is something that you can do. This whole tragedy started with an angry thought. It started with an angry thought or an angry feeling, but we have control over our thoughts. So I asked the congregation on that day to start thinking about what they think about and to change one angry thought into a loving thought. And by doing that, they would make themselves feel better, but they would also be able to show up in relationships in a different way and inspire other people to do the same. And that would create a ripple effect that would positively impact the world. And so people actually did that, because I started getting calls and emails and texts about a week later telling me that just that one simple act had completely changed their lives. And I knew that I was onto something. And really, that is how the Choose Love movement started, with that simple message of choosing love. And when you have some simple skills and tools, some essential life skills that are easy to teach, easy to learn, then you realize you do every moment, moment by moment in your daily interactions, you are able to choose how you thoughtfully respond, and you can choose love in your thoughtful response.
One of the most beautiful anecdotes of your story is the ripple and how it's touched around the globe. But I love the story of the Native Americans from South Dakota who were so inspired by this ripple, by your movement, and how they showed up to pay homage to Jesse. So can you share with the listeners how beautiful that tribute was?
That was incredible. And that was before the movement. That was Jesse. They had an awareness that they said a great spirit had passed, and they came all the way from South Dakota to pay homage, to honor Jesse's spirit, which is just absolutely incredible. I remember being at Jesse's wake, and I don't think I had any expectation going into Jesse's wake, except just the awareness that I was standing, I was going to be in the same room as my son. And I remember there were thousands of people that showed up to pay their respects. And there was a line out the door of the funeral home and down the sidewalk on this main street in Newtown. If you think of Newtown, you think of the flagpole and this historic kind of old, I think it's a congregational church. And there's just this kind of iconic road, and this is where the funeral home is. And there was just a mile of people waiting for hours to walk into this funeral home and pay their respects. We were able to have an open casket. If you think about what that means, it's pretty significant. And so people would walk in, they would sign a book, and then they would walk actually by Jesse, and then they would come by the family, and I was in there. And I remember looking out and watching this progression, thanking people that came by. I was so trying so hard to be present because I wanted to remember, and I wanted to get the most out of thousands of people coming to share my grief, but also to extend love and to be present with me in my mourning. I was so appreciative and grateful, and I wanted to be present. So I remember looking out and seeing all these different people from different clubs, and it was absolutely incredible. And then seeing these Native Americans that were there as well, and hearing why they were there, it was absolutely amazing, astonishing. I was incredulous. It was beautiful. It was so beautiful.
Can I read what they said? I just think it's so beautiful.
Please.
We knew a great spirit had passed from the world, the chief told you. And we felt the spirit ascend to the top of a mountain. That's how elevated it is. And then we felt the spirit ascend again to the top of the mountain. So we came to honor such a great spirit and pay our respects. Wow. And I understand you got letters. I love the little girl from Seal Beach, California, which is just 5 minutes from where the Freedom Riders grew up in Long Beach, California. Little Jenna from Seal Beach, California, who decided that she wanted to write letters to you. And what was that like when you would open up these letters from kids? She had had great loss in Seal Beach when there had been a shooting and a tragedy. But I love that this little girl thought, I need to write to you to let you know that you're not alone. What was that like each and every time you opened up an envelope?
You know, the outpouring of the world was incredible. And it proved that we can unite. And oftentimes we do unite in pain, but that proves that we can also unite in other times as well. And interestingly enough, the majority of the letters that we received were from children, because children have this natural capacity. It's within us, and it hasn't been, it hasn't, life hasn't, I don't know, beaten it out of them, you know, the travails and the pain of life. So it hasn't left them. They still have it, because I believe we're born with this natural capacity for love. It's what unites us all as human beings, the want and need to love and be loved. So the majority of these letters that actually had to close down our post office. We had to rent warehouses to house all of these incredible, this incredible outpouring of love. And these beautiful letters that I received from children, just with this, just this pureness of spirit and just this unconditional love. It was so beautiful, and I just received so much nurturing, healing love from them. And I am forever grateful. And I have all of them, by the way. I kept them. I believe that just that having them in my basement still exudes this beautiful energy, sharing their experiences, this incredible empathy, of, you know, like Jenna, who had experienced loss in her life, but even kids that hadn't, that, you know, it goes beyond empathy. It's compassion, where they identified and not only identified with someone's pain, but wanted to do something to help ease the pain. So they wrote letters and they made gifts and they sent just beautiful expressions of love. It was absolutely amazing. I will never forget that. And I still receive strength from witnessing that and experiencing that.
I want to add another hyphen to your long list of hyphens, and I think it's humble servant. And I, when I think of humble servants, which clearly you are, I think that your son was that on December 14th, 2012. And I know that he was recognized for standing up and speaking out and was given such accolades for those who put themselves in harm's way. When I think of soldiers, when I think of the men in blue, when I've told Jesse's story to those who have served and sacrificed, they weep because of what Jesse at 6 years old was able to do. So can you talk about the recognition of his service, that humble servitude to stand up and to say run, what that was able to have that ripple effect in the service industry of people recognizing that?
Absolutely. So he was given a commander-in-chief funeral, which is reserved for heads of state and returning war heroes. He was given that kind of accolade because his first grade classroom was a literal war zone. Mm. And that was also incredible to be passing by, having the hearse be saluted by heroes themselves. That was absolutely incredible. In fact, he's on the short list for the Medal of Freedom, which is the highest civilian honor, because of his bravery. And that's, I mean, it's incredibly beautiful what he did, but it didn't really surprise me, because that's how Jesse lived his life. He was brave. He would always stand up for those that couldn't stand up for themselves. I always felt like he was our protector, and I wanted to model myself after his courage. How after Jesse's example, how could I not stand up and be part of the solution to the suffering that we're seeing in our country and in our world?
You know, as an educator, I want to applaud you because all of the words you use for Jesse are intrinsic in you of being brave and being courageous. I love that you're so present and intentional. And in education, we need your voice and we need your movement, because coming out of a pandemic, kids are really hurting, as you know. And what I love that you said is you're part of the solution. And so oftentimes when we think of academia, which I'm a part of, we think of the three R's, which aren't even R's to begin with: reading, writing, and arithmetic. But for you, it's so much deeper. It's now this social emotional learning curriculum that you are paying forward. So can you talk about this beautiful Choose Love movement that is now entrenched in schools in 80 countries? And if teachers and administrators are listening to this, this should be part of your curriculum in your classrooms and your schools.
Well, first of all, I want to say that educators are our modern day superheroes. If we didn't know that before, we know it now. Educators have stepped up to take this incredible multitasking role. I don't even know how to describe it. There's so much that is put on their plate by just need, and so much that they have to manage and deal with. For me, I mean, my superheroes are educators, and I hope you had referenced me as a servant, and I absolutely am in service to our education system and every educator. And I hope that the Choose Love movement helps to make their tremendously important job a little bit easier by facilitating learning. And, it's part of the reason why we made the movement a lifespan movement, because our brain development, for one thing, is so vitally important in the process. And that starts prenatally. And so that was the first project that I did, helping pregnant mothers understand the importance of their thoughtful response to their environment and how that impacts their baby's forming brain. If they're anxious, as by the way, I was during both of my pregnancies. So you see how this kind of it relates to my own personal life and learning, but that can negatively impact your baby's forming brain, possibly making a smaller prefrontal cortex, because you're sending information to your baby that they're going to be born into a stressful environment and they don't necessarily have to learn, they have to run. And so it's such an important time. And just having this awareness, you know, a lot of this is simply awareness that we have the power to change, to make positive changes for ourselves and our children. And then we have an infant toddler program. And I encourage educators that drive by daycares or have young children at home to print off this information and drop it off, because these are the kids that are going to be coming into your classrooms. And that also is such a vital time for a baby's brain development. And there are things that you can do to help facilitate that development. I mean, neurons are just firing and wiring during that time. And it's that initial time in a baby's life is so vital and probably the most important time for brain development. And then we have pre-K through 12th grade. And this is probably one of the most comprehensive programs that is on the market today. It's no cost, by the way. And that was
really, I wanted to congratulate that because I love that it's free.
It was so important to me. I was researching early on how Sandy Hook could have been prevented because I knew that it could have. And I came upon social and emotional learning and character development. And I was really breathless when I did, because I realized this absolutely could have prevented the tragedy. And so I remember meeting with a curriculum developer at Sandy Hook Elementary School and saying, "My gosh, have you ever heard of this thing called social and emotional learning?" And she said, "Of course." And I said, "Well, what was the process that was happening at Sandy Hook Elementary School?" And she said, "Well, we spent so much money on a program that we didn't have enough money to train the teachers. And so we sent a small contingent away to get trained, and they were supposed to come back and train the trainer." And we all know educators, you know, the incredible amount of responsibility that they have and the vast amount of material that's out there that's, you know, there's social and emotional learning. And then you have to have mindfulness in order to teach social and emotional learning. And then there's growth mindset and positive psychology and post-traumatic growth. And just there's so many trauma-informed programming and research and all of this. So how do you pick and choose, and which ones with a limited time frame, because you have so much else on your plate, which ones do you take? So we actually distilled all of that down and put all of that into one program. And
it's a eureka moment.
Yeah, because our kids and our educators deserve the best of the best. And then we started off by focusing on the self, because you have to be able to love and appreciate yourself before you can do that for others. And then we extended the learning into classrooms, schools, homes, because I mean, I can say at 44 years old that, and by the way, I have a college education. I was an investment banker previously and a bond trader and a real estate agent, a little bit of everything as a single mom, but I did not have these essential life skills. I didn't have social and emotional intelligence. I know that because I learned it by helping create this program. These are essential life skills that we use in every aspect of our lives, including parenting. But this also means that not all parents have these skills and tools. So we all need to be working in our kids' best interests together. That means that parents, kids, and educators can work together and be on the same page and speak the same language. This is what Choose Love offers. So we have programming for homes as well, for parents to be able to learn these skills and tools and work with their kids and help facilitate the learning that the teachers are doing in the schools. And then we also have programming for communities, because I would be out launching a program in a school district, and there might be the chief of police on one side of me and the mayor on the other, and the downtown business district showing up for the celebration, and the chamber of commerce and pediatrician, and, you know, different community members saying, you know, this is great, but how can we support this movement in our schools and homes? How can we choose love in the community? So we also launched a community program, because really really, we all have to love and support each other. And this is a movement. That's why this started out as a movement, because it is going to take all of us rising to the occasion, thinking about these issues in a slightly different way. You know, I talk about how we have an inherent negative bias. And, you know, I learned this from watching the reaction to the Sandy Hook Elementary shooting. You know, it's natural for us to want to blame and find fault and point our finger in a certain direction. But, you know, that's kind of a natural reaction. But I think that what I tried to do was figure out how and lead by example. So take personal responsibility, take my part of the responsibility for what happened. And I remember, you know, even my mom, it's like the first thing that my mom and dad, who got divorced 30 years ago, agreed on in 30 years. Oh my God, you shouldn't say that, you know, you take responsibility for this, but I believe that we're all so powerful as individuals, and that the way that we show up in life matters. Our thoughts matter, that impact our feelings, that matter, that impact our behavior and how we show up in relationships. And there's a ripple effect to that. And so I believe that in order to be part of the solution, I had to take my part of the responsibility for what's going on in our schools and in our communities. And in that way, I could be part of the solution. And so that's the movement, right? It gives us the ability to be part of the solution. I think everyone wants to do something, but what do they do? What group do they join? This is a way to join a group that's doing something that's positive. The messaging is positive. You know, it's choosing love. And you can do this in your home. You can do this in your school. You can do this in your community. And it's really putting forth an empowering message. It's taking your personal power back and choosing how to thoughtfully respond rather than reacting in a negative way through anger and hatred and violence. This is choosing love. Mm-hmm. And choosing love feels good.
Well, I wish that our listening audience could see what I see. Right behind you is a chalkboard. And I know that as a teacher, a chalkboard is symbolic to me. A chalkboard in your home is where you receive that beautiful, nurturing, healing love message from Jesse. But behind you is your four components of the movement. And I want to read these words for everybody to receive: courage, gratitude, forgiveness, compassion in action equals choosing love. As an English teacher, you have the best penmanship. Oh my gosh, I'm looking at your words, and mine always go kind of at a slant. But I love that it's in the background. And the entire time you've been speaking, I just feel your courage. I sense your gratitude. The fact that you took accountability and the forgiveness component that comes with great tragedy. But you are clearly an empath, and compassion runs through your veins, but it's compassion and action that I think is so important. So with those four components that make up the foundation of choosing love, how did you come up with those four as being the foundation?
That is what you just said, the formula for choosing love. And this is the foundation of everything that we do. This formula can lead you to thoughtfully responding in any situation, circumstance, or interaction you will ever face by choosing love and taking your personal power back. So I love that you saw that. And actually, this formula came from Jesse's brave actions and his chalkboard message of nurturing, healing love. So courage is comes from Jesse's courage. And, you know, Jesse's courage was an extraordinary act of courage, but, you know, it's more the courage that we all need to face life every single day. Science tells us that courage is like a muscle, that we can strengthen it and we can practice courage every day. And I'm talking about sometimes the courage that it takes to get out of bed and put our best foot forward, right? I'm talking about the courage that it takes to be kind when someone isn't being kind to you, the courage that it takes to be vulnerable, the courage that it takes to be our authentic selves, and the courage that it takes to face difficulty that comes in our lives, that we're all going to face at some point, challenges, roadblocks, even pain and suffering. That takes a lot of courage to face it, to move through it, to learn lessons from it and be strengthened by it, rather than to resist and avoid it or even numb ourselves. There's so much courage in that process. And so that's how we start. We have to start with courage. And then it takes courage to practice every single component for the rest of that formula. So nurturing, and you remember Jesse's chalkboard message of nurturing, healing, love. Nurturing means loving kindness and gratitude. And gratitude is so vitally important. These components of the formula, they build upon one another. It takes courage to be grateful when things are not going our way. But gratitude is so important. Remember, I said we have this natural negative bias to focus on the negative. The majority of our thoughts every day are negative and repetitive. And that's on our best day because that's how we're wired. So gratitude can help us shift from that negative thinking, that negative focus, to a more positive focus. We can only focus on one thought at a time. So when you're ready to shift away from that negative thinking into positive thinking, you can think of something that you're grateful for. And there's always something to be grateful for. And in that act of doing that, that practice, that becomes easier and easier, by the way. And then it becomes your go-to because our brains are like plastic. There's neuroplasticity that helps us rewire our brains towards more positive thinking. We can do that just by practicing these positive thoughts. And that actually strengthens us to consider forgiveness, which is our third pillar. If you think about Jesse's message, nurturing, healing. Healing literally means forgiveness. And forgiveness is probably the most important part of my healing journey as well. It's funny because when people heard that I wanted to put forgiveness in the Choose Love program, almost all the adults said, oh my gosh, forgiveness. And remember, we created this program with educators, created by educators for educators. And a lot of the counselors and psychiatrists, psychologists, early childhood development specialists, they all said, oh my gosh, forgiveness, it's a lofty topic. Are you sure that kids are going to be able to understand it? And the interesting thing is, when I ask kids what their favorite character value is, more often than not, it is forgiveness. And they call it a superpower. And they say, literally, it feels so good to let it go. And I can say that that's true because, you know, I chose to forgive Adam Lanza. First of all, I felt compassion for him. I knew that he was in a tremendous amount of pain. So I really felt compassion for him from the beginning, but I did have to choose to forgive him. And then of course it becomes a process, but literally that was my way of cutting the cord that attached me to pain, taking my personal power back. Otherwise I would be letting this young man who was in a tremendous amount of pain himself have control over my thoughts that impact how I feel, that then impact my behavior and how I show up in my relationship. So forgiveness is cutting the cord that attaches you to pain and taking your personal power back. It's a really important component of healing. And of course, it definitely takes courage to forgive when the person who hurt you maybe isn't sorry, doesn't know, doesn't care. And then that leads you into compassion in action. Love is compassion in action. It's important to understand that compassion has two components. It has the identifying component or the empathetic component, but it's very, very important, especially during the time of COVID and for educators to understand that empathy, which of course they all feel for their children, but that's a painful process. When you put yourself in someone else's shoes, when you feel their pain, it actually lights up the same receptors in your brain as physical pain. It is actually a painful process. And that can lead to empathy burnout and empathy fatigue, erroneously called compassion burnout and fatigue. There's actually no such thing, because when you talk about compassion, that has two components. There is the identifying component, but then there's the action component. When we actively do something to help ease another's pain, that is when, by the way, science tells us all of, I say, the nurturing, healing love that we give out, we get back. And it's so important for especially educators to understand that, who are the most empathetic, the most compassionate people on earth, that all of the nurturing, healing love that they give out to their students, they get back. And it's really important to understand that. There's research from Harvard University that found that when we're aware of the benefits of what we do, that we experience those benefits exponentially. So really important that educators understand the benefits of what they're doing every single day when they show up and they're present for their kids, all of that love that they give, that compassion in action, they get back. So when I summarize the formula, when you have the courage to be grateful for what you have, focus on what you have, when that leads you to being able to have the courage to forgive and take your personal power back, which then strengthens you to be able to have the courage to step outside of your own distraction, busyness, even pain and suffering to help others. And when you're doing that, you are choosing love and you are making the world a safer, more peaceful and loving place.
I'm so grateful to our guest, Scarlett Lewis, for sharing with us her philosophy about the importance of compassion in action. In her honor, may each of us spread Jesse's message of nurturing, healing love. May we encourage everyone to extend their hearts to those in peril. And quite simply, may we choose love. That concludes our show this week. Thank you so much for listening. Once again, I'm your host, Erin Grubo. This episode was produced and edited by Matt Martin Hall and Rob Falk. Until next time, dear listeners, may you write what needs to be written and tell what needs to be told.